begin episode 4 of our series for the summer, Life Between the Times, as we're going to go through the letter written to the church in Thessalonica, 1 Thessalonians, and 2 Thessalonians, written by the Apostle Paul to his friends that we looked at last week, that are in that city, that thriving, bustling city of Thessalonica. Now, if you know me, you know that I am always trying to keep up with the new trends of speech, the new phrases that the youth out there are saying. You know, sometimes I'll bring them into the sermon. One time in the sermon, I said no cap, and I had no cap, had no idea if I used it right. But now I know how to use it right. You see what I did there? I'm trying to learn what the kids are saying, and I heard a phrase recently that I love, and I'm incorporating now into my everyday speak, and it's new for me. I don't know if it's new, and it's this phrase. Tell me if you've heard this, okay? Look at God. Have you heard this? Okay, this is like, obviously you're like, people have been saying that forever, but there's like a phrase that people are saying now, which is, look at God. And I'm like, man, this is awesome. Instead of saying, that's amazing, or wow, that's incredible, or that's so cool that, happened in your life, it's look at God. And I'm like, this is really cool. Like, we're in a cultural moment where like a popular phrase that the young people are saying is, look at God, honor God, look what he's doing in your life. So I Googled it, and I said, like, where did this come, like, when did this get popular? And I found out that the definition is the exact opposite of the way that I'm using it and the way that I'm going to keep using it. Like, when I say look at God, I'm literally meaning look at God. God did something amazing in your life. That's how I'm going to use it. But how it's being used is a replacement of look at you. The definition is actually, wow, you have done something amazing. Look what you've accomplished. Look what you've achieved. You are godlike. Isn't that interesting? Instead of saying, look at you, it's look at God. You're like a God. Look what you accomplished. Look what you achieved. Now, that took me aback because I was like, I'm not using it that way. I'm going to use it like the real way. Look at God, capital G-O-D. Let's go. That's how I'm going to use it. But then I was thinking, it shouldn't shock me because that's exactly the kind of culture that we live in, right? A look at me culture. Look at me. Look at my success. Look at my wisdom. Look at my intellect. Look at my ability. Look at my achievements. Look at my trajectory. Everything in our culture is driving at us and pushing us to fall into that trap of saying, look at me. Have you been near a pool recently, because in the summer here in Miami, you have to be near a pool, you have to be near the beach. It's the only way to survive outside. And if you go to a pool and there's a bunch of kids, maybe in your condo or apartment complex, or you can remember from when you were a child, when there's kids in a pool and they're all jumping and doing cannonballs and spinny tops and flips and all these little things they create, there's something that kids always say when they're jumping in. They're not just jumping in and doing cannonballs. They're saying to all the adults who are trying to have conversation on the side of the pool, look at me. Look at me, cannonball. The next kid jumps, look at me. And then they do like a jackknife, and it's like a bigger splash. And then the kid pops up out of the water. It's like, no, look at me. And they do a cannonball 360. It's always trying to one-up the next person to have the biggest splash, the best cannonball. And that's exactly what it feels like we're living in. Everyone is just saying, look at me. Look what I've done. Look at my cannonball. Look at my jackknife. Look at my splash. It's bigger than yours. And that's why the title of the sermon tonight is Mind Your Own Business. Mind your own business. That's exactly what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. You're like, are you sure? Yes, check it out. So if you have your Bible with you, you can turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. We'll be starting in verse 10 through verse 12, just a few verses tonight. It's also in the app. So if you have the Crossbridge Brickle app, encourage you to open it or download it if you have not. I've put a whole bunch of notes there. I'm going to be referencing some things that you're not going to see on the screen, but you're going to want to have. So hopefully you can download the app, click on the notes icon, follow along there or on the screen behind me. Here's what God's word says to us. The Apostle Paul is writing chapter 4, verse 10 of 1 Thessalonians. He says the following. But we urge you, brothers and sisters, to do this more and more, and to aspire to live quietly, and to mind your own affairs, and to work with your hands, as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So the Apostle Paul writes in the first half of this chapter on the posture that the Thessalonians have, and it's one that he praises. He says that they've been known, not just in their city, but in the entire region for their brotherly love. We saw last week the love that they had between each other in the church, but they actually have a love that is flowing out of the church to other churches and communities in the city, but also in the entire region. The Apostle Paul says that they're known for their Philadelphia brotherly love. And he's praising them for this. But he's noticed or heard about something that is faltering or weakening. Or he knows that because they live in a bustling and growing and thriving city like Thessalonica, the capital of Macedonia, that they're going to be tempted and tried by the culture and what it is pushing on them. Because in cities in particular, there is this look at me, look what I've accomplished, I have a bigger business, I've achieved more, I'm growing, I'm advancing posture that people feel. Same posture that we feel. And so he says to them that I want you to live a different kind of life, and I want you to aspire to a quiet life. The better translation of the word aspire in the Greek is make it your ambition. He's saying, you have a lot of ambitions, but I want you to make this, what I'm about to tell you, your ambition. I was thinking this week, what are my ambitions? What are my dreams? What are my goals? You know, all of us think about ambitions at least one time a year. As the new year rolls around, we have resolutions. For most of us, they've already changed. We've broken. We have new ones. Like, that's not going to work. I was overly ambitious. We have dreams. We have ambitions. And I want you to do something right now. If you have a notepad in front of you or if you have your phone, pull it out. Take out your phone. If you have an iPhone, click on the notepad app. If you have an Android, I think you have something like that. I'm not sure. But iPhone users, notepad, get it out, open it up, and write down your ambitions. Like the first things that jump to your mind, just write a word. You don't have to write a whole sentence. When I say, what are your ambitions or what are your dreams, what jumps to your mind? They could be professional. They could be ambitions you have for relationships in your life, romantic ambitions. It could be personal ambitions, spiritual ambitions. What are your ambitions? What are your dreams? Write them down. Put a couple things down. Bullet point. Just put it down there. You know what it means for you. I'm going to keep talking, but I want to encourage you to do this because we're going to get back to it. The Apostle Paul is writing to people that have all types of ambitions. There's a lot of success in this church, which is why they've been able to be generous to all the churches in these smaller cities in the region. There's a lot of growth and a lot of business, a lot of professional development. And they have ambitions. Everybody in this room knows the power of ambition, the power of dreams. And the Apostle Paul says, I want what I'm about to say to be your ambition. Above every other one that you have, here is the kind of life that I want you to live. A quiet life. Did any of you write down, my ambition is to live a quiet life? Probably not. Or maybe if life has been really hectic, you're like, that's my new ambition. Like, I just want a quiet life. But when we hear that we're to make our ambition or aspire to a quiet life, we think it means maybe something around the idea of be kind of behind the scenes or in a bubble or reserved or don't cause too many ripples. But that's not what it means at all. He's not saying live kind of an average or reserved life where like no one really notices you. That's a quiet life. He's not saying that. In fact, this phrase was a common phrase during this period of time, and there was a philosopher by the name of Philo who contrasted a quiet life with an evil life. You can either live an evil life or you can live a quiet life. A quiet life, as the Apostle Paul says that this is to be our ambition, is a life that is respectable. It is a life that is honorable. It is a life that is noble. It is a life that is working for the benefit of the common good, not looking to take from the common good. It is a life that is not looking to create problems in the community, but to bless the community. It is the type of life that people honor and respect. He says, I want your ambition to be a quiet life. And then he attaches two aspects to a quiet life. If you want to live a quiet life, he says, mind your own affairs and work with your hands. What does that mean? The first one's pretty clear. Mind your own affairs means mind your own business. Be about your business. Know what your calling is. Know what your purpose is and be about that. Mind your own affairs, not the affairs of others. And work with your hands. Now, what that just means is put in the work. Mind your own business and put in the work necessary for your business. Later, he says, do not be dependent upon anyone. Do not make your business dependent upon other people. Be about your own business. Put in the work. Commit to it. Bring excellence into the equation. Work hard. Work with your own hands. Mind your own business and put in the work. This is a respectable, quiet life. The kind of life that should be looking to bring benefit into the community, not take from the community, that bring blessing in the community, not stir up problems in the community. Now, there's something that's implied here that's really important. If a quiet life is a respectable life, where you mind your own business and you put in the work, then what is implied is that you know what your business is. That you know your calling, that you know the purpose that God has for you. If someone were to walk up to you after this service and were to say, what is the purpose that God has given you right now in this moment? What is your calling from God? Could you articulate it? Could you share? Could you very simply and clearly say, this is my purpose, this is my calling, this is my business? You see, I think that's where we struggle. Maybe some of us, some things jumped right out, some ambitions jumped right out, some dreams, and you know God's given them to you, and you can share those, but there's other things that are subtle, and we don't think about, and they affect us, and they motivate us, and they drive us, and they influence us, and for many of us, our calling or our purpose from God is clouded. We see parts of it, we don't see other parts of it. There's aspects of our life where we kind of know what God is calling us to, but there's other parts of our life where we're not really sure how our calling and our purpose fits or what it is. Many of us struggle with feeling like we're not at the place we thought we would be in life right now. Many of us feel like we don't know if we're walking the road that God has for us. And I think there's a reason why we struggle with this, why we don't have clarity, why it's hard for us to mind our own business because we don't know our own business. And that is because we have something speaking into us. And it's what I'm calling the loud crowd. The loud crowd. It is the world that is speaking into your life and is putting pressure on what it means to be successful, to telling you what a good life looks like, influencing what your ambitions are and what your dreams are, and clouding out at times what your purpose is that God has given you because you have all of these competing ideas for what is valuable and what is good and what is right. So we struggle with contentment. We struggle with clarity. We don't really know what our business is. Maybe parts of it, but not as a whole. There was a phrase that came out in 1913. I think most of us in this room have heard it before, and it's this phrase. Keeping up with the Joneses. Keeping up with the Joneses. It's still used today. It's in reference to climbing the social ladder. Keeping up with other people. Now, here's what is so comical. Remember I told you that this came out in 1913. And for many, many decades after this phrase came out, up until maybe a decade, maybe two ago, it was a similar experience for everyone, and kind of people related with it because the Joneses is in reference to, ready? Your next door neighbors. Keeping up with your next door neighbors. The person in the townhome that's connected to you. The people on your floor of your apartment or condo complex. You just have to keep up with them. So if Rick has a nice yard, you just have to have a little bit nicer yard than Rick. If Sally across the street gets a new car and she gets that station wagon with the wood paneling on the back and the backward seat that faces the opposite way, some of you don't know what I'm talking about. Some of you know. If you don't know, Google station wagon, wood paneling, backward seat, wild times. My family had one, the most awkward thing ever. You sit in the back and you're just staring at the person behind you. You're like, what is going on? So Sally gets this new car, the station wagon, it's hot, everyone wants it. Then you just gotta keep up with Sally. So you gotta get that RV kind of conversion van thing with the TV in the middle of the captain's chairs with the VCR. Some of you don't know what a VCR is, look that up too. You gotta keep up with who's around you. Doesn't that sound nice? Keeping up with a very small social circle. You only need to project success to a few people. You only need to be better looking than a few people. You only need to be smarter than a few people. You only need to have a nicer car than a couple people. You only need to have more toys and a better vacation than a few people. Keeping up with the Joneses has come and gone, friends. It's now keeping up with the Kardashians. Every single friend, coworker, and classmate you have ever had and will ever have, you can be connected to and are probably connected to through various apps and forms of technology. And you are competing and trying to keep up with every one of them. And not only that, you are keeping up with people that you have never met and you will never meet, but they speak into your life. We are keeping up now with 7 billion people, not just our next door neighbors. It's exhausting. It's heavy. It's hard. Our social circle is so wide, and we consume all of these things, and they influence us, and we're trying to keep up with them. Many of you follow an economist, and you listen to a podcast, or you read this author, and it makes you feel like you should just be able to create generational wealth with some grit and discipline. Everyone should just have all this money. Some of you listen to an entrepreneur who's 24 years old and has made millions of dollars and just tells you constantly how easy it is to make all this money. And you're like, no, it's not. Some of you follow lifestyle influencers that are trying to keep everyone up to date on the latest trends with fashion and beauty. And inadvertently, they make you feel like you're inferior and you're not good enough. And you should take some money from savings to buy in more outfits because you got to keep up. Some of you listen to and read and sit under Christian leaders who inspire you and motivate you to grow in your faith, but yet inadvertently they make you feel inferior spiritually. Like you could never read the Bible that way, you could never pray that way, and no one's ever walked with you to help you understand how. We are keeping up with 7 billion Joneses, and it's exhausting. And we struggle to know what our business is because we have the business of everyone else in our ears and before our eyes and consuming and affecting our heart and our mind. We struggle with clarity. We feel frustrated. We feel like we're behind. We don't really know if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. And the Apostle Paul is saying that if you're going to mind your own business, you also need to fight the Joneses. You have to fight them. It's a lot to fight, I know, but you have to fight the Joneses. You have to fight the people that are speaking in and are affecting you, and you don't even realize it, and it's clouding out your business and your calling and purpose that God has for you. And you need to ask the Lord to give you peace about who He's called you to be and what He's called you to do. And it doesn't have to look like every other person. It doesn't have to compete and compare with every other person. I was thinking about this week, because this is true for all of us. We all feel the pressure to keep up with other people. We have to fight the Joneses, and I wrote a couple things down. I wrote this: it is okay that I haven't written a book yet. It's okay. It's okay that I haven't started a podcast and I've been saying I'm going to for 3 years. It's okay that I can't dunk anymore and my shot is currently broken. So I don't want to go play basketball with my friends in the room. It's okay not to have it all together and feel discouraged at times. It's okay to have problems that you don't know how to fix. It's okay to have a day that you're not productive. We all have lists like this. We can add so many different things. We have to fight against the Joneses, and we have to not allow all these other influences to speak in and affect the calling that we have, because our ambitions, if we're honest, are clouded by all of the other people and all of the other influences that we allow to speak. The Apostle Paul says, mind your own business. Know what the Lord has called you to do, who he's called you to be, and then put in the work. Commit to it. Don't be passive. Be engaged in it. Commit to excellence. It's also a struggle too, I believe. To really know what our business is, to know what our calling and purpose from God is, and then to put in the work. And those two things work together. And sometimes we don't put in the work because we don't really fully know what our calling and purpose is. It's all clouded. And so we just give up. Maybe you're at that place. You're like, I just kind of give up. I've tried a lot of different things. It hasn't worked. I've tried different jobs. It hasn't worked. I'm not where I thought I would be in my life. At this moment, I'm not at the place in my career. I'm not at the place in relationships. I'm not at the place in so many different ways. And I just feel like my life's going to be this. And I'm just going to live for the weekend and get excited when a new Netflix show comes out. And I'm just going to give up. Studies are coming out that we feel like that more and more and more because we have so much speaking into us. I was thinking about that. And I was thinking about those of you that feel that way. And I was drawn back to King David. King David was given a very clear calling by God when he was young. God told him what his purpose is and what the business that he was to be about, and that he was to be king of all of Israel. Wow, amazing. Anointed king. But David is not made king right away. He knows his calling, he knows his purpose, and he has to wait over 10 years running for his life in the wilderness before he's made king. And he had to be focused on that calling, and he had to mind his own business and not hear all the people chirping in his ear and put in the work and do what was necessary to get to that place where God would place him in that throne. And he prays this prayer. Can you imagine how frustrated and overwhelmed and down and full of pressure that he was feeling at so many different times over the course of 10 plus years till he saw his calling come to fruition? He prays this prayer, which is my prayer for any of you that are feeling overwhelmed, and you feel like you're going to give up, and you just don't know if God's ever going to give you clarity. He prays this. He says, when my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to a rock that is higher than I. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to a rock that is higher than I. Here's what he's saying. God, when I'm feeling overwhelmed, when I'm feeling pressured, when I'm feeling pressed in on all sides, when I'm feeling unclear and frustrated and down, will you lead me to a rock that you can help me stand on so I can see beyond my problems? So I can see into the future, so I can see where you want me to walk, so I can see where you want me to go. Lead me, God, to a rock that is higher than I. I need to see beyond myself and what is around me to know where you're calling me to walk, to sustain me and give me strength because I'm feeling overwhelmed. Would that be a prayer that you pray if you're there? God, I feel overwhelmed. Will you lead me to a rock that is higher than I? Will you help me see who I'm called to be, what I'm called to, what my purpose is, where my ambitions have been clouded with the outside influences. Give me the strength to put in the work when I feel like giving up. God, if possible, give me two rocks so I can see even farther. Will you pray that prayer? The Apostle Paul says, I want your ambition, church, to be about living a respectable life, a quiet life where you mind your own business and you put in the work. You know who God's called you to be, and then you work hard with that toward that calling. And here's the result. I love how the New Living Translation translates verse 12. Here's what it says. Here's what will happen. Then people who are not believers will respect the way you live, and you will not need to depend on others. Then people who are not believers, other translations say outsiders, people outside the church, people that are far from God, people that have not come to see the way of Jesus being the way to live, they will respect the way that you live. They will be compelled by the way that you live your life, the way that you manage your relationships, the way that you show love to your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, the way that you pursue your career, the way that you seek to bless others, not take from others, the way that you live a quiet and honorable life and you know who you are and you're about your business and you put in the work, they're going to be compelled to you. See, here's what's so interesting to me. I think if you think about the people that most influence your life, the people that you listen to, the podcast hosts, the content creators, the authors, all the people that you allow to speak into your life in different places in your life, I guarantee you that they have something in common that you respect. And that's this. They know who they are, they know what they were supposed to do, and they put in the work to do it, and they did not depend on anyone else. That is so much of Motivation Monday on Instagram, right? It's so much of self-help. Know who you are, be about your business, put in the work, don't depend on other people. It's biblical. This is a biblical ethic. It's why it's attractive. It's why it garners respect. But something is missing from the self-help books and the motivational talks. Because they cut out this part, verse 12. I'm not saying they're referencing it. They're just living out what is a biblical ethic that's grounded in all of society. When people know who they are and they're about their business and they don't listen to outside voices and they put in the work, people respect it. But for you, church, verse 12 is important. The Apostle Paul says that there is something attached to this, and it's a mission. Your life, whatever your calling is, whatever your purpose is, whatever business God has given you, your life has an evangelistic mission. Every single one of you. You may say, I'm not an evangelist. That's okay. Very few people have the spiritual gift of evangelism. Everyone is called to live a life that compels people to see Jesus. The Apostle Paul says, when you live this way, when you make it your ambition to live an honorable life, a quiet life, where you mind your own affairs, you mind your own business, you put in the work, you don't depend on others, you will compel people to you. They will respect the way that you live, and your response is to be, look at God. Not look at me. That's where motivational talk gets it wrong. It's do all these things so people will say, look at you, look what you've accomplished, look what you've done. The Apostle Paul says, do these things, make this your ambition, so when people come to you and say, what motivates you? What guides you? How do you sustain your relationship? How have you been married for so long? Your response is, look at God. He's the one that did it. He's the one that compels me. He's the one that leads me. He's the one that guides me. That non-believers will come and they will say, who or what motivates and guides your life? I want you to consider why you're here tonight, why you're tuning in online. It's because you've been compelled by someone's life, and his name is Jesus. You're here tonight because Jesus' life, his perfect life, and what he accomplished for you has compelled you to come and worship him and to gather with his people or to grow in knowledge of him. Or you've come here tonight to ask questions because you've been trying to live your own way and you're like, I'm interested in the way of Jesus. So you've come with questions. But Jesus' life has compelled you to come and has compelled millions upon billions of people all over the world to gather on Sunday to worship. I want you to think about Jesus' life. Did his life compel people? It did when he was alive on this earth. His followers followed him around, and it still does today as he is alive, reigning in heaven, compelling people to faith all over the world. Did Jesus live a quiet life, an honorable life? What's the answer? Yes. He lived the perfect life. There's no life that is greater, is more deserving of honor and respect than Jesus' life. There is no life that poured into the common good, benefit, and blessing than Jesus' life. Did Jesus, ready? Did he mind his own business? What's the answer? Yes. In fact, you know that Jesus said this? As everyone is trying to tell Jesus who to do and who to heal and what to be about, he says this. Do you not know that I am about my Father's business? I'm about the business that God the Father has given me. Not about whatever you're going to say. This is my calling. This is my purpose. This is why I laid aside glory and came in the form of a man. Jesus was about his business. Here's the last question. Did Jesus put in the work? You better believe it. You're here tonight because he put in the work and he did not depend on anyone else. He did not ask anyone else to go on the cross. He himself went. Because of the work of Jesus, you are here tonight. Because he committed to a perfect life of excellence. He knew the Father's business that was given to him. He followed that and he followed it to fruition. All the way to the end. Jesus' life is the model for our life, and the Apostle Paul is picking that up and giving a very practical way for us, the church, to live. Know the business that God has given you. Make it your ambition to be about that, and don't listen to the outside influences. And put in the work, and people will be compelled to your life, and your response is to be not look at me, but look at God. Because the business that God has given you, it's his business for you. So how can you make it about yourself? It's not about you. It's about him. That is the kind of life that we're called to live. It's an honorable and respectable life. And so I want to leave you with three questions for you to work on this week. It's not homework. This is church work, okay? If you have an amazing memory, look at God. For the rest of us, these are on the app, or you can write it down. Here's the first question I want to encourage you to work on this week. It revolves around your calling in the moment. First question, what is the business that God has called me to right now? What is the business that God has called me to right now? You may know what your macro purpose is, but dial it in right now. What is the calling and the purpose that God has given me right now? Maybe there's several that jump out of your mind in different places in your life. What is it? Who's he called you to be right now? Question two, what work do I need to put in that I've been neglecting? Now that you know your business and your calling, you've been praying about it, ask the Lord to give you clarity. Ask other people in the church that you trust and respect to speak into your life. When you know what you've been called to right now, what have you been neglecting that you need to begin to put in the work? Third, how can I reveal and praise God in my calling? How can I reveal and praise God in my calling? How can I cause people not to say, look at me, but look at God? The things that you can do, practical steps to reveal to people in your life of God's work in your life. This is what it means to live a quiet life. This is what it means to live an honorable life. Mind your own business. Put in the work. Don't depend on others. And when people are compelled to respect the way that you live, respond by saying, look at God. Amen.